Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm a pretty big movie buff, and if you were to go about engineering the perfect film for me, total Remnick bait, it might be a little like this. It would be set in the Soviet Union, where I lived for 4 years as a reporter. It would be a dark political comedy, because I thrive on that stuff. And it would have actors like Steve Buscemi and Simon Russell Beale. And at the same time, it would be so foul-mouthed that I'd be embarrassed to take my kids, even though they're in their mid-20s. Now, that happens to be more or less an exact description of The Death of Stalin, directed and co-written by the great Armando Iannucci. I'm not going to pretend to be impartial here. I've loved everything I've ever seen by Iannucci, The Thick of It and In the Loop, which he made in his native Great Britain.
Hi, fittest boy. Lesson one. I tell you to fuck off. What do you do?
F off.
You'll go far.
And Veep, which he created for HBO, starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Jonah, don't talk, don't stay. You need to fuck off and go back to Westworld.
But ma'am,
you need to fuck off.
But ma'am,
I said fuck off. Three fucks, you're out.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
In The Death of Stalin, Iannucci shifts his focus from the grubbier precincts of Western democracy and takes a look at one of the most brutal regimes in history. And like Get Out, it's a horror movie that's absolutely hilarious at the same time. And maybe one that cuts a little too close to home for some, since it's currently banned in Russia. Armando Iannucci joined me in the studio. The Death of Stalin is a movie that is beyond funny, and yet, thematically, it seems to fit in with so much else that you've done. The Thick of It, Veep, just the hilarious corruption of power. This is your theme, isn't it?
Well, it's it's my attempt to get away from that theme, having done it for 10 years. I suppose in Veep and Think of It, if they make a mistake, it's embarrassing. But, you know, there'll be another day. In The Death of Stalin, if they make a mistake, they're dead. And it's a difference. It's a comedy of paranoia, craziness. It's a comedy of anxiety, really.
How did you come to this idea? Stalin dies in March of 1953.
Yes.
And he's surrounded by his henchmen, Beria, Malenkov, yes, Khrushchev, and all the rest. And I would have thought that you ran across this in a history book and were inspired, but that's not the case.
No, I mean, I was vaguely aware of the circumstances. And being a classical music fan, is that the right word? I was very fond of the music of Shostakovich, and who was the premier symphonist under Stalin and fell under Stalin's shadow for a while. Stalin criticized one of his operas, and for 2 years, Shostakovich genuinely thought he was going to be taken away in the middle of the night, had a suitcase packed and everything. So that fascinated me, that idea that even if you write the wrong musical note, it could end badly for you.
I think it was for Lady Macbeth of the Metenz District.
Yes, that's right. Yes, Lady Macbeth.
And there was a bad review in Pravda, and that was
it was an anonymous review, but everyone thought Stalin, and the headline was Muddle Not Music. So I was aware of that. Funnily enough, I had been thinking, I knew that the fourth season of Veep, I had decided was going to be my last one, and I was thinking, what should I do next? And I was actually thinking of doing something about a fictional dictator. Now, whether it was an American or a British, whether it was a comedy or a drama or in between, hadn't decided. But I started reading, you know, the classics, Hitler, Mao, Stalin.
All the funny stuff.
The Hall of Fame in terms of tyranny. Just by coincidence, at the same time, I was sent the graphic novel, The Death of Stalin, which was a French graphic novel. And I read it and I thought, well, this is it, because it was absurd, it was crazy, it was terrifying, it was horrific, and yet it was funny, it was dramatic, and it was true. And
so the graphic novel version is funny too, it's comic.
It's not as comic in terms of, I mean, it's absurd, and it was that absurdity that drew me in. And it opens with the concert that we open with, and I
so explain that for the unhappy few who have yet to see the movie.
The film opens with a concert, and this is a true story. Mozart piano concerto is being played. It's going out live in Radio Moscow, in the control booth at the back of the concert hall. They get a call.
Hello.
This is Stalin.
Sorry, it's really noisy. I'm sorry about that. How are you? How is it where you are? Sorry again.
Are you there?
Receiving you.
I want a recording of
tonight's performance. I'll send someone to pick it up.
Wonderful.
Was the concerto recorded?
Was it recorded? Please say yes.
No. Went out live.
Anything's... Oh, my God, I'm dead. And he runs out into the hall.
If you wouldn't mind just taking your seats again, please, that would be fantastic. Take your seat, take your fucking seats, take your seats. Don't worry, nobody's going to get killed, I promise you. It's, this is just a musical emergency. Take your seats, that's it. Nobody be alarmed, it's fine. Sit down! Do not defy me! Sit your asses down!
At which point the conductor, frantic and panicking, faints. So now they need to find a conductor, and they scour Moscow. They eventually pull a conductor out in his pajamas and dressing gown, who comes in and conducts it. And that's a true story, except in real life they got through three conductors. But I thought if I do three conductors, people won't believe me.
Now, one of the reasons I've read that people have become around the world, sadly, more accepting of authoritarian rule is because year by year, decade by decade, the distance between people's memories of what German fascism and Soviet and Stalinist totalitarianism were, it grows naturally more and more. It's worth maybe your describing what that circle around Stalin was like.
Yes. They, you know, for 20, 30 years had worked together carrying out his orders. There was actually a quota system for rounding people up, which, of course, if you think about it, maybe night one, you get the enemies. Night two, you're struggling. So you're just giving people the names of people you don't like. By night three, night four, you're just giving them the names of people you know, because otherwise they might come for you. They're carrying out these orders. They, you know, Khrushchev was known as the butcher of Ukraine in the 30s. He carried out the enforced collectivization of the farms and the you know, the deliberate famine imposed on the rural workers. It was an attempt really to rid the country of lowly laborers. Stalin wanted the country to be industrialized. It was all about steel. And I'm not going to mention tariffs, but it's about steel, not vegetables. So they had been through it. They had all collectively signed death warrants, one of them Kaganovich, for his own brother. They all lived near each other. They all lived in these apartments. So they all their children played with each other, even though he might have signed the death warrant for my father and I might have signed the death warrant for her sister. Somehow they had to just live with this idea that what they had done was what Stalin wanted and therefore was right. So what must they have had to hide from each other and from themselves to kind of live and exist and survive through all that?
Still funny.
All right, comrades, now that we're quarant, I propose we call a doctor.
All the best doctors are in the gulag or dead.
Yes, yes, because they tried to kill the boss.
So any doctor still in Moscow is not a good doctor.
What are people's thoughts on getting a bad doctor?
What the fuck are you talking about? That's mad. What if he recovers and finds out? Well, if he recovers, then we got a good doctor. And if he doesn't recover, then we didn't, but he won't know. What was the name of that woman who gave evidence against the doctors?
Tomaszuk.
Yes, she's got everything we require for this situation. The location of all the remaining doctors in the Moscow area, a proven desire to survive, and a talent for fellatio.
Right, she gets my vote.
Yeah, good. Let her find us some doctors.
Yeah, and if it goes badly, we pin it all on Lady Suck-Suck.
Then we shoot her. Yes, that would work.
You see? We're better as a committee. Let's go on.
But the point I'm trying to get to, though, is just as Mel Brooks, decades ago, somehow imagined a comic turn on Hitler with the producers and Springtime for Hitler, which outraged people. How did you make the comic leap?
The first thing I said when we started shooting was, look, we have to be terribly respectful about what happened to the Soviet people at the time. So there's no comedy about mass killings and shootings. That's played for real. We don't try and hide it, and we don't try and dilute it. We just let it play. That's the tragedy. But indoors, in the Kremlin, that's where the comedy is, in those apartments. They're like gangsters. They're like a group of gangsters. There's something funny about The Godfather. If you watch The Godfather, there's a lot of comedy in The Godfather. They're kind of, it was just business.
Right.
You know, like, where's the cannoli? Get the cannoli while they're beating someone up. You know, there's a lot of that, of strange, dark comedy. We discovered as we were researching the film that joke books were circulated under Stalin. Jokes about Beria and Stalin and torture and rape. And if you were found with a joke book on your possession, you could be shot.
It was worse than having a Solzhenitsyn years later.
Yeah. Because this was making fun of the leader.
But this kind of poking fun at the politically powerful is something you do in your other work. Would you admit that there's some sort of thematic unity to these big projects that you've done?
Well, I suppose, yes. I mean, what I've learned from Veep has gone into the death of Stalin. And also, but then I wanted to take myself out of my comfort zone by taking on these themes that involve death and destruction and paranoia.
It's not just schmucky people in Washington and modern jobs.
No, no one's upset about a tweet in this movie. That's the least of their problems, you know.
Now, a biographical thing, your father was part of the resistance to Mussolini in Italy. Did his experience of life in a dictatorship affect your relationship with this kind of material?
Well, it's interesting, yeah. I mean, at a very young age, you know, at age 15, 16, 17, he was writing for an anti-fascist newspaper and then joined the resistance. And then when he came over to the UK after the war, he didn't take out British citizenship, so he couldn't vote. And I said, why don't you vote? Because, you know, you fought for democracy. And he said, last time I voted, Mussolini got in. And that was his way of saying, don't think because you have a democracy that it's perfect. You know, Hitler got in through an election.
It's happening all over the world.
And this is what's happening. This is why I was interested in the idea of dictatorship as my next subject, because this is what's happening. People use democracy, the guise of democracy, to then change the rules. I mean, what you were saying earlier about people who've forgotten what Nazism meant or Stalinism or fascism, because they've grown up with democracy, if they get fed up with it, if they're annoyed with politicians, if they feel politicians aren't talking to them, they start to think, well, there must be something else then. And there are those bizarre, frightening statistics about 20%, 25% of people say, you know, democracy isn't the only system that they might be interested in. And what's happened in our democracy, this is why the likes of Donald Trump have had such success, is politicians have concentrated more and more on those few who change their minds, the independents, the swing voters. More and more people have felt that they aren't being listened to and they've felt disenfranchised and therefore they don't participate. And then someone like Trump comes along and says, okay, you know, I'm going to talk to you.
So oldest question in the book, though, about this and your work, is it possible that people see your work and it has some, beyond making them laugh, does it help make them see or reimagine reality?
I hope so. I mean, that work is born out of a sense of frustration I found in how democracy works and how, you know, I felt something like the Iraq war with Britain's participation with America in the invasion of Iraq against every conceivable expert, scientific, objective, non-objective, emotional point of view. Everyone's saying this will be a disaster. How someone in the UK, our Prime Minister Tony Blair, could somehow bend the will of Parliament, the will of his party, the will of the military, the will of intelligence to make this thing happen. So that was really why I wrote The Thick of It and In the Loop. And it's to do with that, okay, what happened in democracy here that this could, and therefore how are decisions made, and therefore what does go on behind the scenes?
You didn't film in Russia. You filmed this in England, right?
Mostly in London, and then a week in Kiev, and then a couple of days in Moscow.
Oh, you did? But yes. You did a lot of research in Russia,
yes,
am I right?
Yes, went out to Moscow. And
what did you learn there? What did that give you?
We spoke to younger people now saying, what are you told about Stalin? And they said, we're taught at school, they said, some people say he killed millions, other people say he industrialized us and made us a great power. You decide.
Because when I lived there in the late 80s, early 90s, that was the period of anti-Stalin.
Yes.
The Kremlin was speaking out against Stalin.
Yes.
The whole business was about de-Stalinization of society.
That's right.
And new textbooks were
interesting.
Now it's moved somewhere
else.
It's
about authority figures. It's you know, the 100th anniversary of the Russian Revolution. They didn't really celebrate the revolution because that's all about bringing the government down.
Yeah, they don't want that.
But they celebrated the victory in the Patriotic War, the Stalingrad, the right. You know, the strong leader, Stalin as a strong leader. In Moscow now, there's a statue to Tsar Nicholas II as well, and Peter the Great. That's the message, the kind of authority figure at the center.
Well, apparently your film was screened once or twice.
Yes.
And you had every expectation of there being a regular run.
We were given the license. You have to get a license from the ministry. We were given it. We did our press screenings. The press applauded when Stalin fell over. we dubbed it into Russian. It was going well. And then 2 days before the actual opening night, the license was withdrawn.
What happened?
I think someone in the Ministry of Culture panicked. And there is an election coming up.
There is.
They said it was an attempt to subvert. And we know how much a stickler Putin is for not having anyone interfere in the elections of another country. I mean, that's an absolute golden rule.
It is
a golden rule.
And obeyed at all turns.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So we can see how, you know, he didn't want that line to be crossed.
So we showed once or twice, but just to the press, it was not...
No, Cinema in Moscow decided to show it anyway until it was raided by the police.
To regular folks. It was raided in the middle of the screening?
Yes. I say raid, which makes it sound like, you know, people stormed in. Some police turned up and said, "What's showing here?" And they said, "The death of Stalin." And they went, "Uh-huh." And then they walked up. They left. But the cinema then had to withdraw it. But, you know, how can you ban a film these days? People are going to see it. Somebody tweeted me a photo of them watching it on their laptop underneath Putin's window in the
Kremlin.
So
people are ripping illegal copies?
Yes, yes.
Are you happy about that?
No, I've reported them to the higher authority. I mean, that has to be stamped out.
Absolutely.
It's the worst crime of all, isn't it? Piracy?
It's terrible, terrible, yeah. Terrible. You mentioned earlier that you had planned to leave Veep after its fourth season.
Yes.
Why? What was driving you? Was it the commute?
United Airlines' inability to apologize under any circumstances.
It is terrible, isn't it?
To be honest, by the fourth series, I thought, I think I've said what I wanted to say. So my last episode was the one where it ends in an electoral tie. And that, for me, was my finale. And what I've enjoyed about it is actually becoming a viewer again and being able to watch it not knowing what the hell is going to happen next and what anyone is going to say next.
Now, you finish a film. You, like many other filmmakers and authors, once it's done, it's done. And there's no need to dwell. What are you thinking about next?
I'm doing Charles Dickens' David Copperfield.
Different. And you can get all 800 pages into a 2.5-hour film? Or is it a series? Or how do you envision it?
No, it's a film. I wanted to try and remember what it is I love about the book. And it's the language. It's the characters. It's the psychology. It's the emotion. The story is very slight. I mean, Dickens' stories, I mean, he was sort of making it up as he went along, doing these monthly and weekly installments. Too many adaptations pay so much homage to the story. There's a fantastic scene in it where David, age 18, gets drunk for the first time. And all of London is swimming in front of him, absolutely swimming. It's hilarious. It's never in any adaptation because it's not part of the story. So the idea is it's inspired by the themes within the books. It's going to be 1840s London, but I want it to feel rather like contemporary London. I want it. It should feel exciting. It should feel like ancient Rome. It's the capital city of the mightiest empire in the height of the Industrial Revolution. For any, you know, 17 and 18 year old arriving in London for the first time, it should look tantalizing, you know, exciting, and yet have this cruel aspect. And I want to explore these kind of emotions. It's all about what happens. It's status anxiety. That's what it's about. It's 1 minute being rich and the next minute losing everything and how you behave then and the friends you want to try and have and then suddenly realizing that the friends that mean most to you are the ones that you started to look down on the more successful you became.
One of the funniest aspects of Ian Parker's profile of you in The New Yorker some time ago was the very careful obsession with the mechanics of obscenity and obscene speech. So much so, I think you even had an advisor on this.
Yeah. I mean, I don't swear. I'm not swearing.
I don't believe a word you say. Was there swearing in Dickensian England?
Well, certainly not in the novels. There won't be swearing in the film.
Well, we have small disappointments. Armando, thank you so much.
Pleasure. It's thank you very much.
Armando Iannucci's movie, The Death of Stalin, starring Steve Buscemi and Simon Russell Beale, is just out in theaters.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.